Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, September 21st, 2017. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, "Please, Father Kills His Children Himself," by Kevin Barlow and Edith Brady Lunny. Bloomington. A 33-year-old Bloomington man hid the family cell phones, killed his two sons, set fire to his Brittany Court home, and then hung himself in the basement early Tuesday morning, police said. Authorities identified the deceased as Eric Ringenberg, 33, and his sons, C.R., age 2, and R.R., an infant. The boys were identified only by their initials in a police statement issued Wednesday evening. Pamela Ringenberg, 32, was treated for smoke inhalation at a local hospital. Autopsies showed the children died of strangulation by ligature. Both Ringenbergs worked at State Farm, a company spokeswoman confirmed. The Bloomington-based insurer will have grief counselors on site for co-workers and others, she said. In describing the incident, police said home surveillance equipment provided details about the fire and the deaths. Pamela Ringenberg awoke to the sound of the smoke alarm near her bedroom. She looked for her cell phone to call for help, but could not find it. She frantically searched for her family, but was unable to find them. Suffering from smoke inhalation, said police, she fled the house and sought help from neighbors. Bloomington firefighters arrived at the house around 3:08 a.m. Before the fire, the cameras show Eric Ringenberg concealing the family cell phones, including his wife's, in a kitchen cabinet, said police. Video provided evidence of Eric Ringenberg's sole role in the deaths of the children. Police said he intentionally started the fire in the basement after the children were already deceased. The victims were pronounced dead at 4:15 a.m. Assistant Police Chief Clay Wheeler said crime scene investigators were at the home about 36 hours before leaving around 3 p.m. Wednesday. The video footage showed how the deaths occurred, said Wheeler. The video record helps confirm the evidence you're gathering, said Wheeler, adding several first responders took advantage of a critical incident debriefing. McLean County State's Attorney Jason Chambers was made aware of the circumstances of the case from the beginning. Based on a review of the evidence provided by BPD's investigation, I agree with their conclusion, he said. Authorities also reminded the public that if they or someone they know is contemplating suicide or is in a mental health crisis, they can get help by calling the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 800-273-TALK, that's 8255, or the Twin City-based PATH Crisis Line at 211. And there is also a related story entitled, "Radio Calls Provide Timeline of Bloomington Fire Deaths," by Kevin Barlow. Bloomington. A review of radio calls between firefighters and dispatchers provide a clearer idea of what emergency responders faced when they were called to a house on Brittany Court where three people died Tuesday morning. Authorities identified the deceased as Eric Ringenberg, 33, and his sons, C.R., age 2, and R.R., an infant. The boys were identified only by their initials in a police statement issued Wednesday evening. Pamela Ringenberg, 32, was treated for smoke inhalation at a local hospital. Autopsies showed the children died of strangulation by ligature. After the initial dispatch of a structure fire around 3 a.m., firefighters were told en route that two young children were stuck on the second floor of the house located in the Eagle Crest subdivision in northeast Bloomington. Firefighters arrived around 3:08 a.m., reported some smoke coming from the second floor, and said there was one victim, presumably outside. The scene commander planned to fight the fire with extinguishers, according to dispatches collated at broadcastify.com. Two more victims were immediately located when firefighters started to search the second floor. At 3:20 a.m., firefighters asked for a fourth ambulance. 9 minutes later, dispatchers were asked to notify fire investigators. 2 minutes after that, command reported two victims were removed, the fire was controlled, ventilation procedures were beginning, and a secondary search for victims was underway. A minute later, firefighters asked for the coroner's office to be notified. At 3:40 a.m., firefighters announced the primary search was complete and confirmed three victims were found. Fire Chief Brian Moore was notified and made aware of the multiple fatalities. The victims were pronounced dead at the house at 4:15 a.m. On Wednesday, crime scene investigators remained at the house, appearing to gather evidence. Most of the front windows were open, and a generator appeared to be providing power. Police officers stationed at the house Wednesday referred questions to headquarters, but the department spokesman and Chief Brendan Hefner both were out of the office. According to the department's Facebook page, several officers were at a recruiting event at the University of Illinois at Chicago. The next story is headlined, "Lead Detected in Six Elementary Schools," by Julia Evelsizer. Normal. Lead has been detected in water fixtures, but no water fountains, in at least six elementary schools in McLean County, Unit 5. Parkside, Fairview, Hoos, Sugar Creek, Tawanda, and Hudson elementary schools were included in the first phase of district-wide testing, which will continue through the school year. Affected fixtures included sinks, pot fillers, and hose sprayers in kitchens, and several hand sinks in classrooms. "We're testing all district buildings, starting with our 12 elementary schools built prior to 1987. This is the result of the first six elementary buildings," said Joe Adelman, Unit 5 Director of Operations. During the professional testing, Adelman said, two water samples were drawn. The first sample was tested immediately, and a second sample was drawn and tested after 90 seconds of flushing. "For a majority of the lines, lead was detected on the first draw of the respective fixtures, but little to no lead was detected on the second draw. Most of the locations aren't used as a drinking water source," said Adelman, "but all affected fixtures were shut off. We're seeing nothing detected in our water fountains, so that's excellent," said Unit 5 Superintendent Mark Daniel. "Our pipes are copper with some lead soldering. Our plumbing experts said there will always be some level of lead detected in most water, but it's such a low level that it's undetectable." Unit 5 recently mailed letters to parents with children enrolled at the tested schools. "The risk to an individual child from exposure to lead in drinking water depends on many factors, including the amount of lead in the water, the frequency, duration, and dose of the exposure, and individual susceptibility factors," said Daniel in the letter. "Parents, guardians who are concerned that their child is displaying symptoms consistent with elevated levels of lead should contact their health care provider." A new Illinois law passed in January requires all elementary schools and daycare facilities in the state built before 2000 to track drinking water sources for lead contamination. If lead is found at levels above 5 parts per billion, the school must work to reduce numbers to zero and report the locations to parents and the Illinois Department of Public Health. According to testing requirements, Adelman said schools must be in active operation when the testing occurs. "After we received results last week, an outside plumbing company came in to start addressing those fixtures and start the corrective action that needs to be done," said Adelman. "We're working with the plumbing company to clean aerator screens, flush water systems, and possibly install automatic flushers in some buildings." Bloomington's District 87 also recently tested for lead and is fixing the affected fixtures. The next article is entitled, "Library Board Weighs In on Move," by Maria Nagel. Bloomington. The Bloomington Public Library Board will continue to focus on expanding the facility at its current site unless the City Council provides new direction. The idea of tearing down a city parking garage at Market and Monroe Streets was raised September 5th at a meeting of the Downtown Task Force. The location would create a space for a new library and Connect Transit's bus downtown transfer station. I think it's a very intriguing idea, Board President Alex Cardona said during a meeting Tuesday night. But our consensus has been our current location is where we would like to be. The City Council, the majority of them, still have that consensus as well, added Cardona. A majority of aldermen gave a cool reception to the proposed project on September 11th. The proposal was floated as the panel explores potential catalyst projects to reinvigorate the city's core. The task force was created in May to review existing planning documents and brainstorm ways to move downtown redevelopment forward. But Ward 2 Alderman David Sage called the proposal into question on September 11th, and a majority of aldermen reiterated support for expanding the library at 205 East Olive Street rather than moving it. The proposal was reviewed with the library board Tuesday, with task force members Amelia Baragas, a Ward 4 alderman who chairs the panel, and Justin Boyd, chairman of the city's planning commission, and Connect Transit's board chairman Mike McCurdy and interim general manager Isaac Thorne. We've spent a lot of time and capital on where we want to be already, said library board member Mike Rakes, referring to $80,500 the board has paid Farnsworth Group to study the library's expansion at its current location and provide three conceptual site plans. There is a need for a transportation center downtown wholeheartedly, he added. The Catalyst project likely will arise Tuesday during a task force discussion on final recommendations that could be submitted to the council by October 31st, said Baragas. Here's a story headlined, ISU receives $1 million gift for students with difficult backgrounds, by Julia Evelsizer. Normal. Illinois State University students who have faced personal challenges now have the opportunity to succeed through a new scholarship program. The scholarship was established through a $1 million gift from the nonprofit organization Give Something Back. Students who have experienced significant financial or personal challenges, including having an incarcerated parent or having been in foster care, are eligible for the scholarship. Up to 50 students will receive scholarships each year to pay for tuition, room, and board. These scholarships will support students who have faced a very unique set of circumstances and challenges in their formative years. The scholarships created through the gift from Give Something Back will allow students to achieve the goal of a college education and the start to a fulfilling career, said ISU President Larry Dietz. Give Something Back was founded in 2003 by Robert Carr of Lockport. After receiving a college scholarship when he was a struggling student, Carr founded the organization to provide scholarships to help Pell Grant-eligible students attend college and graduate in 4 years. Financial need should not stand in the way of academically talented students receiving a high-quality college education, said Dietz. Access to education is important in this rapidly changing world, and these scholarships will allow Illinois State to serve a greater number of students throughout the state. The donation from Give Something Back is part of ISU's $150 million campaign, Redbirds Rising, the campaign for Illinois State. More than 40,000 donors have contributed over $103 million in outright gifts and commitments. The next item is entitled, Normal Warns Residents to Look Out for Door-to-Door Scammers, by Derek Bay. Normal. Normal residents should be careful about to whom they give their information, especially given a recent rise in door-to-door scammers. The town is warning residents to look out for unlicensed solicitors offering cheaper electrical service through an aggregation program after revoking licenses for Green Energy and Liberty Energy due to questionable tactics and misleading information. Some residents can choose which company they buy their electricity from, but should beware of people who come to their door asking for a quick decision or to see an electric bill. Legitimate solicitors must register with the town, stop soliciting when residents ask them, obey no solicitor signs, carry and display permits, and ring bells, knock, or otherwise contact residents only from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Please ask residents to find out the name and company of any solicitor who comes to their door. A full list of licensed solicitors is available at normal.org/1357/door-to-door-solicitors-and-peddlers. If you believe you have been misled and signed up for an alternative energy supply program, please contact Ben McCready at 309-454-9504 for additional assistance, according to the site. Here's a story entitled, Central Illinois Expands Hurricane Response. Fundraising Concert Relief Drive Planned. Volunteers Aid Sent. By Paul Sweech. Normal. Central Illinois is redoubling its hurricane response as a third hurricane, Hurricane Maria, devastates U.S. territory. Midwest Food Bank, 2031 Warehouse Road, Normal, continues on an almost daily basis to send semi-trailer loads of disaster relief boxes to areas recovering from Hurricanes Harvey and Irma, Communications Director Phil Hodel said Wednesday. American Red Cross Central and Southern Illinois region has deployed 181 volunteers, including 55 from Central Illinois, to assist survivors of Hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria, Communications Director Trish Barnett said. And the rest of us have two new ways to help. A fundraising concert for Midwest Food Bank will be 7 p.m. Saturday at Illinois State University's Braden Auditorium, 100 North University Street, Normal. The concert will feature Michael W. Smith, a winner of Grammy, American Music, and Dove Awards. Tickets range from $17.50 to $32.50 and are available at the Braden box office at www.ticketmaster.com or by calling 800-745-3000. A hurricane relief drive will take place 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday at Coldwell Banker, 304 North Hershey Road, Bloomington. Donations also are being accepted at coldwellhomes.com/hurricane-relief. Money will go to the TREG, the Real Estate Group, Fund, Coldwell Banker's charity managed by the Community Foundation for the Fox Valley Region, Incorporated. Money raised will be donated to Global Giving, which will distribute the money to local not-for-profit organizations in southern states affected by the hurricanes. Midwest Food Bank has sent 23 semi-trailer loads of food, water, and supplies to survivors of Hurricane Harvey in Texas and Hurricane Irma in Florida, Hodel said. Another two semi-loads will head to the Georgia coast for Irma relief on Friday and Saturday, and 3 to 4 additional semis will head to Florida next week, Hodel said. The food bank provides supplies to the Salvation Army, which distributes them to people in need. They, the food bank, are one of our very best partners, and it's amazing how much we're able to accomplish with their help, said Kevin Smith, Emergency Services Director for the Salvation Army Florida Division. In addition, the food bank's distribution center in Fort Myers, Florida, also has sent out 2 semi-loads directly to people in need in that area, Hodel said. Red Cross's 181 volunteers from Central and Southern Illinois have been deployed to Texas, Louisiana, Georgia, the Carolinas, and Florida, Burnett said. A Red Cross volunteer from Peoria is the region's first volunteer to be deployed to Puerto Rico to assist with Irma and Maria response, Burnett said. More will be deploying to Puerto Rico in the coming days and weeks, she said. Here's an item entitled, Lexington Woman Wins $250,000 Top Lottery Prize, by Pantograph Staff. Lexington. The manager of a Lexington grocery store has won $250,000 after buying an Illinois lottery ticket on her break. Cheryl Wells played a $250,000 crossword ticket and instantly won the top prize, lottery officials announced Wednesday. I checked my ticket again and again, she said, when she presented her winning ticket at the Illinois Lottery Prize Center in Springfield. I still can't believe I won such a big prize. Wells has lived in Lexington for 35 years and is manager at Lexington Finer Foods. She plans to pay bills and invest for retirement. Lexington Finer Foods received $2,500, or 1% of the prize amount, for selling the winning ticket. The $250,000 crossword is a $10 instant ticket with a top prize of $250,000. Of the 32 top prizes available, 16 have not been claimed. For more information, go to www.illinoislottery.com. The next article is headlined, Hails to Make Smooth Transition to Replacement. Bloomington City Manager to Start in Joliet, November 27th. By Maria Nagel. Bloomington. In his remaining 2 months as Bloomington City Manager, David Hails says he will work to ensure a smooth transition as the city looks for his successor. The Joliet City Council voted Tuesday to authorize a 3-year contract for Hails to serve as its new city manager, likely starting November 27th, at an annual salary of $215,000. Looking to the future, I am pleased to have been selected by the City of Joliet as incoming city manager and look forward to this next stage in my life and career, said Hails in a prepared statement released Wednesday. Hails, who was taking the remainder of the week off, was not available for comment. Over the next days and weeks, I will be working with our staff and elected officials here to ensure a smooth transition as Bloomington looks to begin the process of recruiting a new city manager, said Hails' statement. Bloomington has a very capable team that I am confident will continue building on the city's success and addressing its challenges. It has been an honor to serve the city of Bloomington as city manager for the past nearly 9 years, and I have truly enjoyed living and working in this community, he said. The city will likely hire a search firm to conduct a national search for Hails' replacement, said Renner. On the news of Hails' hire in Joliet, Renner and other city officials praised Hails' work on behalf of the city. I think he really helped get the city through its toughest financial times, Renner said Tuesday night in a text message responding to a Pantograph request for comment. I wish David all the very best in this next assignment. Joliet has chosen well. Hails' contract provides for a 60-day notice. Bloomington hired Hails in December 2008 under a 4-year contract with a base salary of $150,000. He had been the finance director of West Jordan, Utah, and previously served as city manager at Bend, Oregon, and Kannapolis, North Carolina. Following his shortest Bloomington contract extension, approved in May 2016, Hails has been a finalist for similar jobs in 2 other communities. At that time, the Bloomington City Council approved extending Hails' contract for only 18 months through July 11, 2018. Before then, he had two previous contracts. In April, the Bloomington City Council approved a 1.9% salary increase for Hales, taking his annual pay, retroactive to January 1st, from $185,190 to $188,660. In March, Hales withdrew his name from consideration as one of three out-of-state finalists to replace retiring Racine, Wisconsin City Administrator Tom Friedel. Hales was among five finalists selected in July to fill the vacant city manager's position in Topeka, Kansas, but he was not hired. Here's a story entitled, A Zoo Historic Night, Fundraiser Set at Zoo, by Maria Nagel. Bloomington. Organizers of Miller Park Zoo's annual major fundraiser, ZooDoo, are planning a Zoo Historic Night, Saturday, focusing on the history of the city's 126-year-old zoo. It will have an Art Deco theme, and we will be reminiscing about the zoo and how fortunate we have been that previous generations recognized the importance of this zoo and what it offers this community, and the importance for us to support the zoo to make sure it's there for future generations, said Susie Oley, Development Director for the not-for-profit Miller Park Zoological Society, which organizes the event. A record-breaking 275 people signed up for the event. Registration is closed, she said. The fundraiser, which drew 265 people last year, will feature activities from 7 to 9 p.m. at the zoo and live auction and dinner at Miller Park Pavilion. We are also celebrating a year of record attendance, said Oley. The zoo had more than 123,000 guests last year, up from the 114,311 visitors in the prior year. They included 17,000 people coming to education programs for preschoolers through college students, she added. We make a huge impact in our community, but a lot of people don't realize that we also participate right here at Miller Park Zoo in breeding programs for 53 animals, and many of those animals are critically endangered species, said Oley. Organizers are hoping to top the record-setting $75,000 netted from last year's ZooDoo. ZooDoo participants this year will have the opportunity to see many of the zoo's animals up close and personal, said Oley. Those include seeing a Sumatran tiger being trained and harbor seal and river otter demonstrations. A silent auction inside the zoo's Kathofer Animal Building will feature more than 100 baskets, including one with pieces of art created by several animals with their paws or feet. The live auction at the Park Pavilion includes naming rights for two river otter pups and four baby red wolves, and the opportunity to be a zookeeper for a day. During last year's event, another $15,000 was raised specifically for a new exhibit featuring five species living together: Indochinese box turtles, crested wood partridges, northern tree shrews, pygmy lorises, and fairy bluebirds. That exhibit and another one showing off a 17-foot-long, 4-year-old female reticulated python snake have opened. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for September 21st. Please stay tuned.